My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. I'm Seth Payne. I played in the NFL for 10 years. I'm going to have my buddy Drew Hodgson on with me today. He played with me with the Texans. He was a center. I was a defensive tackle. We used to go against each other in practice. He also played collegiately at Arizona State. If you enjoy, please subscribe. Gets right into your inbox box. It'll be nice and easy. And also leave a 5-star review. That would be really, really cool. Enjoy the show. Drew, Buccaneers prevail 31-26. Tom Brady goes to his umpteenth Super Bowl. And this game, in the first half, I think you had seen the notes I had written. This was all about, oh, wow, Tom Brady and his poise in the playoffs is really coming through here. And this is where the Packers are going to piss down their legs and all of Tom Brady's experience is going to make the difference. And then the Packers dashed that against the rocks for most of the second half. Because Tom Brady at one point had thrown 3 interceptions in 7 plays, and yet, and they weren't pretty either, right? Like they were all right. Fluttering high arm punts, and all of his, except the one over the middle was just errant. It was a little bit high, but they're all his fault. There wasn't, like, you couldn't blame as many drops as the Bucs receivers had in this game. You couldn't necessarily blame the receivers for those interceptions. So did Tom Brady genuinely outplay Aaron Rodgers here just by getting a huge lead in the first half enough that he could withstand his mistakes in the second half? Or am I just too much in love with Tom Brady?
No, I think your love is showing through too hard. I mean, that was objectively, I think Aaron Rodgers won that duel, even though I kind of reject the premise of duels between players
when guys aren't actually facing each other.
They're not actually throwing footballs at each other.
I'm glad you said that, actually, because I would say that with the Packers, at the very least, the absence of David Bakhtiari was a big deal. And it's not like that's anything new, but they'd been a much better pass protecting offensive line all season long. It was their pass block win rate today, according to ESPN stats, like midway through the fourth quarter, was 57%, which is about average. In during the season, they were 74%. So the big huge difference swing. Really yeah. was the Bucs defensive line. And again, this is another area where I'm biased, but JPP, I would say Vita Vea. Tell me, as a former center, what's it like going against a guy that is never going to have double-digit sacks or anything, but can single-handedly like destroy an offensive line's pass protection by just bull rushing every time?
Yeah, I mean, it's devastating, because especially when you're considering that, you know, how mobile is our quarterback, what kind of guy do we have? Now, Aaron Rodgers obviously is one of those guys that I think is pretty underrated as far as his mobility goes. But in general, I mean, it's always going to rush the pass. Always. Yeah. Every single time. I mean, it's going to force them to get rid of the ball before they're ready.
Well, and that's where with Vita Vea, I was watching him, because I was trying to make a comparison to Vince Wilfork. So the nose tackle, Vita Vea, who'd been out and ended up playing a lot in this game. And early on, he wasn't playing a whole bunch. He ended up playing a lot after his broken ankle. But because Wilfork would never get a lot of sacks, and he was more speedy than Vita Vea. But both of them have this ability to just compress the pocket to where Rodgers would be stepping up. Rodgers would flee the pocket before he absolutely had to, actually, before he really had to. It's just that with that presence up in his face, one guy would get free. There would only be one guy loose on a pass rush, but Rodgers would start running. And then I think that I'm still going to give Brady a little bit of the gamesmanship understanding of what to do. Like in the fourth quarter, those interceptions were all deep. I don't know if I can't remember if the Packers scored off of any of Brady's turnovers. But I think that Rodgers stalling out in the second quarter in the red zone down there. And then this is what I'll blame. I'll blame the Packers coaching staff for at the end in the second quarter,
not going for
kicking the field goal instead of going for it. And then in the second quarter, also not being ready for the punt. Like, you send defense stays out there. You got Tom Brady. You think they might, Bruce Arians, you think they might go for it on fourth down? So they just were completely unprepared for that whole situation. And then that poor Kevin, what was it? Is it Kevin Clark?
What's that kid's name?
Kevin Clark is a writer. Kevin, that poor kid, I don't even want to call him out, but I must. He was just an atrocity out there.
That was pretty rough. I mean, there were a handful of things, but I think that, you know, if you had to pick one, even though it's just not really fair to boil it down to just one factor in the game, I mean, I think those key screw-ups by Green Bay's coaching staff, I mean, that's just brutal. On top of the fact that, I mean, Aaron Rodgers played well enough to win that game despite the changes to the offensive line, despite the kind of push that Tampa Bay was getting inside. I mean, that was a bit of a debacle. And I don't even know how you can really defend what was going on with Tom Brady at the end of that game. I mean, that was obscene to me. You can't play that way. Those picks were, if that reminded me of, do you remember Peyton Manning at the end of his career when he was in Denver?
They weren't as, his, no, 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 no. His career no, in Tampa, Peyton
come
Manning.
On. It looked like it was shot out of a cannon that was malfunctioning.
Peyton Manning couldn't even throw he was throwing wobbly passes. He couldn't even put a spiral on it. At least Brady's had a spiral on it. This is going to be my most fanboy moment. This is going to be it right here. It was in Tom Brady, it was 28-23. There's 8 minutes left in the game. He's thrown three interceptions in the last seven attempts. Green Bay has dominated.
As all dual winning quarterbacks do.
Yes, dominated the time of possession. The Buccaneers had 52 yards of offense at that point in the second half. They go to Gronk after Gronk has been mostly a blocker the entire game. So good job play calling by Bruce Arians there for a 29-yard reception. So they get into field goal range. Brady misfires on an open receiver out to the left. They're still in field goal range. It's 3rd and 8, and the pass rush comes free. And Brady, and this is Drew, this is Brady's greatness. He understood his limitations at that moment. He wasn't going to throw yet another interception as he was getting tattooed by a pass rusher. So he just chucked the ball at the ground. They kick the field goal. They go up by 8. And then the Packers, who have already established that they are frightened of their own shadow, when they get the chance down in the end zone to actually go for the touchdown on fourth down, they kick the field goal instead. The advanced stats, I know everybody always thinks like, well, the advanced stats are always going to say you should go for it. I guess the advanced stats there said that it was about a wash as far as win probability, whether you actually went for the touchdown there or kick the field goal. I would say that I think Aaron Rodgers not running there, choosing to pass the ball on third down instead of running, kind of set that decision up for him. So even though Tom Brady wouldn't have been able to run for squat right there, if Tom Brady could run, he would have made the right decision instead of what Aaron Rodgers did. I chalk this up to Tom and his poise in big games.
Yeah, no, I think that you make a very compelling argument that not throwing a fourth interception in 9 passes was a testament to his experience.
That's
his talent.
Yes. Do you know, like,
his fortitude and his gamesmanship? I can't deny that.
Drew,
that is true.
Discretion is the better part of valor. That's been established. Shakespeare, established. Somebody probably said that. So you can't even argue with that.
Shakespeare, he knew football.
Other other tepid defenses I'll make for Tom Brady. Brandy, my wife, noticed at one point in the game, she said, wow, he really does go down easy these days. And I said, because he's wise. He needs to protect the ball and he needs to not get injured. And yes, he goes down easy, but that's all. It's all every single thing.
You're such a cult member. You're just assigning three-dimensional chess to every single possible outcome.
I did also write down in the first half that the deep ball is obviously still there. I thought, you know what?
That was a wild thing. I can't.
His arm got tuckered out in the second half.
The thing that he's never really had, like, I actually think what's funny about it is up until the last couple of years, I sort of feel like he's had an underrated deep ball. Like, people have sort of hammered him for not being able to throw it deep, and he's just as effective as most guys.
Well,
he's just not like a specialist like Breeze and some of these other, you know, prolific deep ball passers.
Well, it's who he has, right? I mean, when he had Randy Moss, it was all right. But then it was easy to discount his deep ball because you could say, well, he's just throwing up jump balls to Randy Moss.
Yeah, because all the other teams that are crushing it in the deep game don't have prolific receivers.
They're all doing it with
like, come on, it's like they all have incredible playmakers, but it's just you're motioning at me.
No, I had to get back to my Tom Brady love. I was afraid you were veering away.
are you only interjecting to tell me how hot Tom Brady is again?
Okay, this is the one quote where I felt like I was going to rise up triumphant and say, you know what, Bill Belichick is a fraud, he's a scam. Bill Belichick's going to go down as the most brilliant footnote in NFL history because Tom Brady's going to win three straight Super Bowls with Bruce Arians. But the one quote from Bruce Arians that they showed on the broadcast, that when he said New England didn't allow him to coach Tom Brady, I allow him to coach. So Tom Brady's always coached his receivers and his offensive line and all that. So I assume he meant Tom Brady's input into play calling. And that was interesting to me just because I think the one thing that I don't think Tom Brady has always gotten a lot of respect for his physical skills because he doesn't have many. I mean, he's been a very accurate thrower. But I think even in Green Bay, I think he might have always felt a little bit underappreciated. And what Green Bay coaches didn't understand was that his ability to just actually execute that game plan mentally way better than anybody else was what made him better. And they knew he was smart, but they still thought it was the system. There's that quote in that book about Belichick where they say an unnamed coach says that they figured that they could have done what they did with half of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. The top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, I think they figured they could have done what they did in New England. And ever since I read that quote, I've been furious at the entire state of Massachusetts.
Yeah, I mean, that's a complete hot garbage position to take. I mean, but I will say if your read into it is that, you know, what we let Tom do here in Tampa that they never were able to really pull off in New England by winning five Super Bowls is coach on the field.
You know,
well, I feel like that's a blazing hot radioactive position to take when it's worked out pretty well in New England, despite whatever coaching ability. No, I disagree.
I think what happened here is that New England clearly and obviously underperformed. And if they had just a credible GM anytime after Scott Pioli left the building, instead of letting Bill Belichick shop for all the groceries
in the same year.
Yes. Yes.
Why stop at one a year?
They wouldn't have had so few shutouts in the playoffs. If they even had a shutout in the playoffs, I mean, God, it's ridiculous. Yeah. They would have 45 minutes time of possession, but I would say as far as the things that aren't readily apparent when it comes to a Tom Brady coach team is the body positioning of the Bucs receivers. It's one thing I noticed today. It's not as simple as, wow, those guys are just out competing and out contesting the Packers for these balls. That's what I've seen Tom Brady work with the receivers specifically about the body positioning and everything. And like the way they turn for the ball and the timing of it and all of that, that's all meticulously coordinated by Tom Brady. And it's just, frankly, it's just, that's why he's better than Aaron Rodgers. I
totally agree with. I mean, I think that's the value that he's bringing at this point in his career, right? I mean, especially when you see the thing that's surprising is that despite whatever issues he had in like throwing punt interceptions, like you mentioned earlier, is that even the balls that he was so accurate with consistently, you know, throwing the outs, especially. I mean, he had a few today that were just nowhere near.
Right,
which used to just be automatic. And that's the stuff that's kind of brought the offense looking a little sloppier, I think, than it actually is.
Yeah, well, and I think that you're right to point out Peyton Manning in his last Super Bowl. I don't think Brady's anywhere near that yet, but you can see it'll be a slower decline for Brady.
Sure.
But it is the errant passes, the wildly errant passes. It's not like he's never had those before, but maybe that's a little bit of the canary in the coal mine. The one other aspect of the pass rush for the Bucs that I wanted to ask you about was the Bucs ran a three-man pass rush more in the first half than they did in the second half, and it was pretty effective. And the one thing that I was impressed with was that when they had a three-man pass rush, like, the defensive linemen were busting their asses. They didn't stop. If they got double-teamed, they were still bull rushing, which is a lot of times when people crush a defensive coordinator for calling a three-man pass rush, half of it's on the D-line because you feel there's a human urge that you have to fight that you think, well, I'm going to get double-teamed anyway. Like, you have to have guys that'll fight through that and just drive through the double-teams. I thought the Bucs did that. As an offensive lineman, when you see a three-man pass rush, I always wondered if you guys feel like it's almost like when you're, when you're in college and you're taking a class that's supposed to be easy and you end up getting a C minus or a D in it because it was so easy. Do you get a little nervous like that? It's so eerie and calm that there's only three defensive linemen.
I have to think that that's sort of the mentality when maybe when you're a tackle. I think that happens for the guys on the outside.
Because it's just lonely and quiet.
Because you're just thinking, that if you do take it a little too easy, you can still absolutely get smoked. It can still turn into a one-on-one if they rush the right way.
Right, yeah.
When you're the guard, it's the equivalent of being, a receiver who is the fourth option, and you're just never going to get the ball, so you see him, half-assing it down the field. I mean, that's basically what the guards are doing usually versus like the three-man front. They're kind of just hanging out. If you're a tackle and you get smoked on that, you should just put a gun in your mouth. It's
you know where the interior line gets in trouble on the three-man rush is if there's a spy. So the fourth rusher would be a spy who's out there hanging out in the hook area. And then some, like a center or a guard, decides he's going to be a hero and just clean somebody up, right? Like, oh, I'm going to go over and crush this guy in the ribs. I'm going to take out his spleen. And then you open it up wide open for that spy to just come up and rush. Yeah.
Just leave a giant gap. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'll concede that. Look, Brady played a hell of a first half. You can never take that away from me.
No. You can't. They look pretty solid. I still think at the end of the game with all the drops and everything else and the picks, I mean, it just looked like a sloppy sort of game to play, leading into a Super Bowl.
Well, the officials were okay. That's the other thing. The officials weren't calling anything. In terms of defensive holding or pass interference. And so it's ironic that the last play of the game was Kevin King dragging. Like, at first I thought that it was a flop at first, but then did you see the angle where it looked like Kevin King was just water skiing behind him? Like, that was I give credit to the kid for trying. It was a rough day for Kevin King.
it wasn't one of their better outings. I mean, I still, God, that receiving core, I assume, based on what other people tell me about receivers and how good they are, I guess it's just really, really strong. So, I'm sure he benefits from that. And I don't know how it levels up compared to what's going on in Green Bay, but they pulled it out.
Oh, the other thing I thought you would appreciate as an offensive lineman was in the first half, the screens that the Bucs were running. I mean, those were beautiful. They really were out there like an armada escorting those guys.
It was a clinic. I mean, it was perfect. I mean, they sucked them in perfectly. The guys, I mean, there was one of the screens, and I think it might have been right after you had messaged me too, when we were, going back and forth during the game, where it was just a three-man rush, which is so hard to run a screen against, generally. So hard.
Right, because everybody's out there with their eyes. You're playing zone behind it, so everybody can see it coming.
They're playing zone behind it. They're right there. They should be waiting on it, and they still had just an armada of guys body on body. And they still made it work. I mean, that's well done.
What is it when teams get their screens snuffed out routinely? Is it generally that they got a couple tells somewhere? I mean, because it's not tendencies by formation typically, because everybody's got those and you counter them. But it drives me insane sometimes when you see teams that'll be trying to run screens and every time nobody has bit on anything.
Well, I mean, my feeling, and I think Houston has had this problem a lot in the past, where usually, I mean, of course, it can just be your mannerisms and kind of your body language, I think, can give it away during the play, especially with the offensive line up front. But more than anything, I think it's situational. Like, the teams that really know how to do it are calling it at the perfect, most unexpected time.
Yeah.
And you don't really, there's no rhyme or reason. I don't know. I think it's instinct. I don't think that they're looking at a script and saying, okay, yeah, second and eight, this is when we're doing it. They feel the flow of the game and they know that, okay, we got them sucked in now.
And well, yeah, and that's when they do it. That's
teams
when
that are bad at it. Like, Houston never had a good sense of when to call it.
It's because they're just trying, because they planned on calling it instead of as a response to an over aggressive pass rush or you know with linebackers that are biting too hard elsewhere. They just kind of probably felt like, well, it's in the game plan this week. I don't want to think about Houston right now. I'm on to
sorry.
Houston's going to be fully intact. They're going to have a head coach and not a dysfunctional front office. And Deshaun Watson will probably be there as soon as tomorrow morning, you know, working out or something in the building.
Yeah, no, there's no question. Definitely no influence by a potential cult leader going on in the front office by any means.
All right, I won't call Tom Brady the MVP of this game for having the wisdom to not throw a fourth interception. And I'll give the MVP to the Bucs defensive line. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Okay. I think it has to be. I mean, the stuff they were able to pull off, like you said, with a three-man rush and being able to buckle up in the third quarter. I mean, I understand that Rodgers didn't look like he was maybe his, you know, 10 out of 10 self, but still, I mean, they look pretty sharp to me. I mean, it just feels weird that's the team that's going to be in the Super Bowl after all the drops and the picks. And it just wasn't a very clean performance. But they didn't look that good last week to me either.
No, I know.
I mean, am I wrong?
No, you didn't. It was a weird – last week was a weird game too, I thought. Like, last week, I didn't think Brady or Breeze played all that bad last week. I thought that they were taking what the defense gives them and all that nonsense. And then Breeze obviously just made a couple of bad – Breeze looked bad when he made his bad plays.
He did.
I guess what happened with Brady in both these games –
He
made some really bad plays, and it didn't ultimately kill him at the end.
Both those teams last week looked as close to mirror images of teams that I've seen playing each other in the playoffs in a really long time.
Yeah.
I mean, both sides of the ball. They looked really similar top to bottom, and both quarterbacks were doing a lot of the same kind of up and down, you know.
Erratic play, but with dominant defenses.
Right.
Yep. All right. Yeah, I'm going to go watch this Bills game. And with that, I went and watched the Bills game, and then Drew and I caught up afterwards. All right, Drew, I had high hopes for the Buffalo Bills. I thought it was going to be a slugfest. I deluded myself into thinking this game could be more than it was, but ultimately, the Chiefs win 38-24. Mahomes goes 29 of 38 for 325 yards and three touchdowns. Josh Allen looks kind of like he did last year versus the Texans in the playoffs, and that's where we are. Fuck this. I don't like the way we started off that. I had no place to go with it. Hold on. I got to give you your input. 3, 2, 1. All right, Drew. I had deluded myself into thinking this was going to somehow be some kind of slugfest. I gave the Bills defense more credit than I should have. The Chiefs win handily 38-24. It felt even a lot more lopsided than that after the Bills jumped out to a 9-0 lead. Are the Chiefs an NBA team? I've been trying not to say this because it felt too simple and easy, but you know, sometimes really good NBA teams will kind of cruise through the regular season and then they get to the playoffs and they're a whole different team. Is that what we witnessed last night? Was the Chiefs deciding, okay, yeah, here we go. Now we're going to show you what we're really all about.
It looks that way. I mean, they definitely have another gear that they can, you know, shift into. I think that it's pretty obvious that their experience was on display versus what's going on in Buffalo. I mean, they look like a team that's very comfortable in being in an AFC championship game. They knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah. And I think if you look at their key players, whether it's Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce or Tyrann Mathieu, who was robbed of a sack because that Josh Allen intentional grounding doesn't get counted as a sack. That's BS, by the way. That's a rule that needs to change. Well, there's a loss of down. There's a 15-yard penalty or 10-yard penalty. But otherwise, I mean, the sacks, they also had four other sacks in that game. The Chiefs sacked Josh Allen four times for 53 yards. It was an absolute drubbing. And I think You're exactly right when you talk about how one team looked like they belonged there, they were ready for it. And the Bills just looked a little bit more timid. Stephon Diggs got pressed a whole bunch at the line of scrimmage, and it limited him. And I think that the Chiefs just showed up and showed who they were and what you expected them to be. I don't think that this says a whole lot about Josh Allen in the future, other than that he's clearly not at the same level. I think he's not at the same level mentally that Pat Mahomes is. Is that fair to say?
It is. It's one of these things where I would be interested to hear what, our shared friend in Sage Rosenfels would think about his performance, because I'm just not enough of an expert on each individual quarterback play to make that, guess on his future. But it's one of those things that sounds trite to say, but he doesn't look like the guy to me. He looks uncomfortable. He doesn't look like someone who's in, several years now, into their career. I don't know that you can keep just calling him a young player without enough experience. I mean, the guys who are ready usually are ready by now.
I don't know. It's his third year. It's his third, and he just took a step forward this year because of the changes in his throwing motion. Mm-hmm. Like he became more of a pure, I don't want to say a pure passer, because he'll always be a runner also.
Yeah.
The running was a huge part of it. And I think the Chiefs said, okay, look, we're going to play a whole bunch of man, which is going to free the quarterback up to run. And Josh Allen ended up running for 88 yards. But when you've got Patrick Mahomes on the offensive side of the ball, the quarterback can run all he wants, unless it's Lamar Jackson. And we've seen, like, even when it's Lamar Jackson, that's not enough if you're not getting it done in the passing game. Yeah, he's got to take that next step next year to where he's diagnosing things pre-snap. Because those sacks, a lot of those sacks were just in not recognizing the blitz. You know, it was in him kind of being surprised about what was coming, and him not being ready for it, where a more veteran quarterback knows at least the blitz is coming, and he's ready to throw it away if he doesn't get what he wants. Allen's like kind of still, he's still processing as the blitzers are coming, as the pass rush is coming, and you can almost kind of see him thinking like, oh, wait a second, should I throw this away? And it's too late.
That's what I was thinking. You can see the wheels turning as he's moving during the play. Like you can actually see his body language looking like he's trying to understand what the next move should be. And he had plays where his scrambling capability looked a lot like Russell Wilson in Seattle to me. I mean, he's like reverse rolling out, buying time, shaking a tackler off, but then he doesn't do anything with it. He doesn't make a spectacle of a play that he should, that other guys who are capable of doing the same sort of, like second level kind of movement into the extending the play, I should say. And he doesn't do anything with it. So it's, I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I'm not really sold on it, barring their defense just turning into something that's historically effective for him to be able to lean on it.
Yeah, and we'll get to Leslie Frazier's defense, because Leslie Frazier is a leading candidate to be my Texans head coach. So that's a whole nother topic. I will give Josh Allen this. When it comes to the execution of the RPO game and a lot of the read option stuff, he's pretty smooth. Over these last 10 years, as the college quarterbacks become more and more prevalent and their college schemes become more prevalent, I love the guys that really genuinely sell it. And Josh Allen will run 7 yards out and carry out the fake like he's got the ball after he hands the ball off. It's just that by the second half, you'd see so many times where Allen would be rolling out on either a sprint option or an RPO, and the Chiefs just had everything covered downfield. Yep. It was just they just had everything blanketed.
Their secondary looked good. I mean, I'm surprised.
It's all about matchups. I'm wondering about just exactly how good they'll look versus Tom Brady. But the other thing about the Bills' defense, Leslie Frazier kind of playing a bend but don't break. You know, it used to be that teams would play that bend but don't break because it was too hard for offenses to actually march down the field throwing everything underneath. Guys, between Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and the rest of them, they turn so many 5-yard catches into 15 and 20-yard receptions. And I mean, some of it's leverage issues by the defense, but a whole lot of it is just what we'd said, that they're animals in the playoffs. These guys, Travis Kelce annoys the crap out of me, But I cannot deny that he's just got a little something extra in these primetime games.
Yeah, I that's a great example of a guy who I hate that he's good.
Yeah,
it just bothers me personally that he's good. Yeah. Like there's like characters like that in movies that you watch, like TV shows, and you're just like so mad that they're like doing well and it's not even real life.
It's like any of those those John Hughes movies from the 80s where like
yes,
the rich good looking guy and like everything just goes right for him and there's nothing this snotty guy can do.
We're at the end of the movie, like, yeah, sure, the rich guy didn't end up with the girl, but he's rich. And he's hot and he's going to do fine. Like after the movie ends, he's going to do better.
In real life. Yeah.
In real life.
By the time he's 35, he'll be doing the exact same things that he was doing. Like when he was a kooky teenager. He doesn't lose that ability to bully people as life progresses.
No,
he lost the yacht race when he was 16. How will he ever recover? How will he ever recover from that when he takes his gap year?
You mean he didn't end up with his first love when he was a sophomore in high school? What a disappointing finish for him. Like, oh wow, it's like you dodged a bullet, man.
Lost the girl who was super hot for their high school to the nerdy sophomore, but then he goes off to college where he's a rich kid like that drives a Porsche and has all the cocaine. Like
where his dad bought the education wing of the building, so he was able to get into Harvard even though he doesn't belong there, you know. But getting back to the Chiefs, I mean, it's there one thing that's just so obvious in the Buffalo, you know, Bills defense obviously is no joke, and their team speed is just outrageous. I mean, Kansas City, like in space and doing anything else, it's night and day for almost any other team that you're watching. It's every single player can just extend the play.
And they execute all the little wrinkles that they do so well.
Right.
You know, it might sound simple enough to just throw in a new few plays or a few wrinkles every single week and have all these options off the jet sweeps and the end arounds and the little Travis Kelce shovel pass. But to do all those things at the speed they do, it's really fun to watch. I mean, teams that try to do that much usually screw up a lot. And these guys don't screw up a lot. You know, you have the Mecole Hardman issue in a couple snafus in this game, but being down 9-0 just doesn't matter to them.
It just runs so smooth. And that's even despite when you're watching, you know, Mahomes scramble and he gets in the open field and he just looks like he's limping at, you know, 50% ability.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's still just, you know, getting 12 yards.
Oh, the other coaching issue in terms of just not being ready for the big game or perhaps not understanding the situation that you're in. Sean McDermott, I know you're a defensive-minded head coach. I know that your defense played better as the season went along, but you have to understand that you're playing the Kansas City Chiefs. You kick a field goal from the 2-yard line. You kick a field goal from the 8-yard line when it's 24-12 midway through the fourth quarter. And it's just, it's not going to get it done versus the Chiefs. You have to just put your foot on the gas all the time versus those guys.
Yeah, I feel like a theme of that in the playoffs. Like some of these teams aren't realizing that they're in the playoffs. And that you're just not going to win these games by doing that.
The problem is too many motivational posters. Like too many, like, hey, we're going to treat this game just like a regular season game or this or that. No, you're going against Andy Reid, you know, who all of the negatives about Andy Reid have seemingly vanished in terms of his game management or anything else like that. He figured it all out. I think at least part of it, I'd like to think at least part of it is that perhaps his game management issues have disappeared. One because he has Patrick Mahomes, which helps a lot. Who Pat Mahomes has still, I believe, yet to lose an NFL game by more than one possession.
That's a wild stat if that's true.
Yeah, that's a crazy stat. If that's I believe that's what I heard on the around the NFL podcast.
Wow.
But I wonder if Eric Bieniemy, who The big game right now everybody is trying to play is, okay, well, how much is Eric Bieniemy actually responsible for this offense? Because it is an Andy Reid offense. How much is he actually calling plays? I do wonder if at the very least Bieniemy has such a working relationship with Andy Reid that a lot of the game management decisions can be handled completely by Andy Reid instead of Andy Reid being as heavily involved in play calling.
Yeah, That's a great question. I feel like that's sort of the if you're a Texans fan or if you're someone who's just on the outside watching it with interest, that seems to be the $1 million question, is what exactly is the, you know, the input in that formula? Like, what,
yeah,
who's responsible for what in that? And it's like, but I mean, you have to think, you know, Andy Reid has always had these really interesting, innovative sort of offenses. And it seems like it's come to fruition now in kind of the modern age where people are doing more RPOs and everything else. And quarterback play has changed a bit, where McNabb was kind of like the freak at his position at that time for a brief period. And it's like now that his running ability and scrambling would be nothing compared to half the quarterbacks in the league now. So,
and Reed's been doing it forever. So it's just like old hat.
Yeah.
Like, he's just now able to really, you know, spread his wings, beautiful little butterfly that he is, and
yeah,
fly
just
off.
So light on his feet.
The Eric Bieniemy job search is intriguing me. Like, the more I watch this, and when I watch clips of Eric Bieniemy, and I've talked to a couple people that know Eric Bieniemy. Eric Bieniemy, aside from all of the racial components and systemic issues and all of that, I do think that at least part of it with Eric Bieniemy is that I don't think, and this is a compliment to Eric Bieniemy, I don't think he wants to play the kiss a billionaire's ass game. I think a lot of billionaires don't know how to handle guys who aren't going to pretend to kiss their asses. And I think there's a really good chance that that's the quality that's going to end up making him a really, really good head coach. But he needs to have an owner who either has the balls or ovaries or whatever to understand that, oh, look, I'm not hiring a guy that needs to speak to the board of directors properly or anything. Because Eric Bieniemy does not give a damn about, like, presenting himself. Dan Campbell got the job up in Detroit, and he had a really weird, wacky press conference, but he sent a pamphlet. He sent a little booklet that he had written with his coaching philosophy, all this stuff, up to the owners, or the Detroit Lions ownership before he went up there. And they were just gushing about it. Like, oh my gosh, his ideas about corporate culture are just aligned so perfectly with ours. That corporate culture, my ass, hire a bunch of good football players and some good coaches and go play football.
Yeah. Yeah. But the corporate culture they've had in place has just worked out beautifully for
well,
them. So,
well,
so make sure you get someone who aligns with that. Yeah. No, I mean,
no, it's like they're hiring somebody to work at Ford Motor Company.
Right.
And it's not the same. I think
that stuff works. The coaches that go in and interview and sell them on it and have a good motivational speech. I mean, it's cliche, but I mean, it works. It totally works. I agree. I mean, I think no matter what, those owners, people in the front office, people who, you know, probably come from generational wealth, there's an element of privilege, no matter how self-aware they are, cannot be completely separated from the decision. Like, there just is.
No, yeah.
They are being placated to nonstop, all day, every day, by players, everyone else, and even the ones who are very aware, at least to the extent that they can be, do not realize that, you know, the one time that someone's actually being real, it might just come off as rudeness or a lack of, you know, interest in the position.
When right.
It's not really the case.
Yeah, it's not. Well, because, yeah, a lot of them, it's their version of like, oh, well, hey, I took my lumps coming up. I was a junior executive for 3 solid years before before I made it to senior executive.
I actually took my SATs.
Yeah.
So, right.
All right, buddy. Well, we'll get together later this week and preview this Super Bowl.
Awesome. Thanks.
Have a good moment.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.